Now on Sunday Extra, we're going to talk about a magnificent library that doesn't contain a single book. It's got an index of sorts, which currently contains 11 works, none of which has been published and none of which is accessible by any human being until the year 2114. It's called the Future Library, and it's a century-long artwork and a big beguiling idea that exists physically in some interesting ways in Norway. Future Library was conceived by Scottish artist Katie Patterson, and it's produced by our next guest, the Future Library's chair, Anna Berta Hovind. Anna's in Australia this week talking about the Future Library in an actual current library, the National Library in Canberra, as well as at the Sydney Writers' Festival in various events, including the excellent recurring event, The Library That Made Me. Anna, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Hello, nice to be here.
It's great to have you. There are so many intriguing aspects of the Future Library project. It involves one writer a year, who you say is selected for their outstanding contribution to literature, contributing a new work on the understanding that it won't be published for about a century until 2114, but they nevertheless deliver the manuscript to a forest outside Oslo. Could you tell us about the connection between these new literary works and the forest?
Yeah, so Katie Patterson is a conceptual artist. Remember that. So conceptual artists, they come up with concepts. So it's not a plain one thing. It's many things. So her idea was that when she originally proposed it was it's going to last for 100 years. And she said, we're going to grow a forest. Okay, we're growing a forest. And we're going to make this beautiful silent room. We have that silent room in the new public library at Deichman Bjørvika in Oslo. And in that library, there are 100 boxes lit up. And in those boxes, we are putting a text every year, unpublished and unread by an amazing lineup of authors. We have altogether 12 authors now. And the library contains now 11 texts, but we'll get this last one in June. So it's actually physical things, but it's also this conceptual idea of a library in 100 years. Or 88 years, I must say now, because we are actually counting down.
Time flies.
So the final thing is that we're going to make paper out of the woods that is growing now. And so all the text will be taken out in 2114 and printed on that paper.
So that's the forest that's currently growing. What sort of wood is it? And how confident are you that it'll be there in a century's time to be able to print these manuscripts?
I've been looking at your forest today because I've been traveling from Wollongong to Canberra. And of course, the Norwegian wood is spruce mostly. But last year, we actually added pine because a diverse forest is more resilient. And because of climate change, we had to make sure that our forest will survive these 100 years. So we added pine, actually. So it's a mixture, but it's also a naturally growing forest. So it's not like a landscape forest. It's a natural forest.
And the trees were planted when the project began in 2014, I understand. So how tall are they now?
They're taller than me. And that is the funny part with this work. There's lots of fun things with this work. But, you know, we didn't really think about it, that they will grow. I don't know why. I mean, because what happens now, we're having this ceremony, because part of the work is also a ritual that the authors have to come to Oslo. We walk together to the forest, to that small clearing. And that's where the handing over happens of the new text. So usually we sit on the ground, the audience just sit on the ground waiting for the authors. But now we can't see each other because the trees have grown more than my size. So we really didn't think about it. So we're thinking, how are we going to do it this year? Because we might have to move it, you know, a little bit to see each other.
The first author to contribute to the Future Library was Margaret Atwood. So you certainly set the bar very high in year one, I've got to say. Could you please tell us about her reaction to the project and maybe some of the other reactions of other authors who've contributed in the over a decade since then?
Yeah, Margaret Atwood, that was so scary because she was our first author and we didn't really understand how would authors respond to be invited to an artist artwork. We had no idea. But the fun thing with Margaret Atwood is that she, I think she follows her gut feeling. And her gut feeling said yes immediately. So it took us maybe 2 days before she responded, which was, and that we were so happy. I still remember where exactly I was when I got the message. The way she interpreted it from the very beginning is that it's a hopeful project. So for her, it's all about hope. And being famous for being quite dystopian, it's interesting that that's how she understands the work, because it believes in a future, it believes in readers, it believes in books, it believes in libraries in 100 years. So for her, it was a hopeful project. And I must say that, for instance, also Hong Kong, she got the Nobel Prize of Literature 2 years ago. She called it a century-long prayer. So for many of the authors, it has this hopeful part of it. But when I was in India earlier this year, it was really interesting how it resonated with people there. Our last author is Amitav Ghosh. He's from India. So I was there and they said it's a slow march for peace, referring to Gandhi. And I never thought of that even, but it makes sense in a way.
On Sunday Extra, we are speaking with the chair of the Future Library Project, Anna Berta Hovind. And Anna, you mentioned that the next handover ceremony is at the end of June this year, and it's Amitav Ghosh who's handing over a manuscript. And I understand that the aspect of a forest was particularly attractive to Amitav because that's something that he's written about as well. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why when he was asked, because we always ask the authors, what extra would they put into this ceremony that makes this special for them? And Amitav wanted his Jungle Mama book about his forest played out. So there's going to be a performance late at night, the night before, in the forest, in the dark. But the problem is it doesn't get dark in Norway, you know. I mean, so we're going to play it really late on Saturday night. And yeah, so for him, he wanted to make that connection between his forest in India and the Norwegian Nordic forest in Oslo. But I can mention, because Tommy Orange, he's an American author, indigenous author, and he is also coming because he was delayed last year. And so he's coming. So there will actually be two authors this year.
All right. So bonus manuscripts in 2026 after a lean year last year. It does sound like a fascinating physical handover ritual. Anna, the concept of the Future Library itself is big and beguiling and intriguing in lots of different ways, but it's also got a lot of practicalities associated with it, some of which you've alluded to already. And it sounds to me like you're the one who has to think about all those practicalities. Firstly, how on earth did you get involved in this project? And what was it about it that made you say, yes, I'll take on 100 years worth of logistics?
Don't get me started. It's a long story. But yeah, as you say, Katie had the idea. It's her idea. But I had to make it happen. And some would say that's art too, because it's so hard. You know, how do you dare to get started on a project like this? I mean, when she first proposed it, I thought it was impossible. And I thought, where am I going to start? 100 years? Because this was I was working for the property developers, classical transformation over the harbor, you know? And so my board were property developers. And I think that if I had told them about the 100 years, the first time, they would have said, do a risk assessment. Nothing would have happened, you know? And I think this is a work that shows that things are possible if you meet the right people, if you negotiate, if you persuade, if you have to have all these kind of skills. But first of all, you have to have an attitude that it's possible. You know, it is possible to do it. So I think I've done crazy things before. So the first thing I did was actually the forest, but I thought, I'll do the forest first. The 100 years, I thought I'm not going to think about it because that's crazy. And so I went to the municipality office and asked the guy who is director for the forest in the municipality, because it's a municipality on forest surrounding Oslo. And I asked him, can I have a forest? And he was completely silent for a while. And then he said, why not? The thing is, we need more why not people, you know, that is actually thinking, yeah, why not? Let's try to figure it out. And when he said that, I realized this is going to happen, you know, it's going to happen. People are going to believe in it. But I didn't dare to ask for the contract with the municipality before after 7 years, because I think I had to prove it. So today I have a 100-year contract, which they've never done before across political interest across elections and budgets, you know, yearly budgets. So this is a long-term project. You have to think out of the box. And I seriously think that the world needs these kind of out-of-the-box thinking, long-term cross-generational projects. People are in need of this, you know, to believe it's hope in the future.
Well, Anna, your persuasive powers are obviously very impressive because you wanted a forest, you asked for it, and you got it. How big is the forest that you got, and is it the size that you asked for?
Yes, exactly. We could choose, actually. It was a blind date with the foresters, and they even had prepared this open fire, and they had made coffee and chocolate. But, you know, they loved this approach from an artist, but it's tiny. Because I come from the deep forest and the farm myself, so I understand how tiny it is. But it's within the bigger forest, so it's a clearing, which is not a clearing anymore because they're growing. But, you know, it's a smaller forest within the very big forest surrounding Oslo.
Given that the printing doesn't have to be done still for another 80-odd years, is that something you've turned your mind to yet? Because at some point, some trees are going to have to be cut down and turned into books.
Yeah, no, I must admit, I have not solved that at all. And of course, things can happen. Things can happen to the forest. But, you know, if you don't take risks, nothing will happen. So we have to dare thinking about the future and planning long term, because that's what we need, you know. And I think, believe in serendipities and also destiny, that if we start doing things, it will actually happen.
You mentioned that as well as the physical forest, there's the silent room in the public library in Oslo. And if listeners are interested, it's well worth looking at the image of the silent room, because it's a beautiful room. Could you explain for us exactly where that wood comes from and how it was constructed?
Well, first of all, the forest that we got is a managed forest, which means that it's cut and it's replanted over and over again. So these trees were made to be cut. So we cut the trees and we planted 1,000 new trees. And the wood was dried for, I think, 3 years. And then Katie Patterson and the architects of the new public library in Oslo designed that room together. So it is actually the forest that we cut before we planted the new ones.
And we know that the manuscripts themselves will not be published and revealed until 2114. So exactly how much is known about these manuscripts, Anna?
Not much. The title, that's the only thing. And for me, for instance, I've seen, because they delivered physical paper, so I can see how, kind of have an idea how long it is.
Okay. All right. So you can verify there's no one who's just sort of had a bit of writer's block and thought, oh, well, I'll just send it in because it's going to be a century till it's opened.
Well, Margaret Atwood threatens us that, and also in public, I've heard that it's a grocery list. So this is all about trust. It's an exercise in trust. So it's about trusting them that they are writing something, but also that they don't cheat.
Yeah. And everyone involved in the project is proceeding on trust, contributing to something that in all likelihood will come to its climax when no one involved in it currently is around. What sort of arrangements are in place to ensure that you actually get to the finish line of 2114, Anna?
Well, I worry about this constantly.
I bet you do.
But of course, I have set up a trust from the very beginning. So the formal structure is there. I have the 100-year contract, which also entitles the forest and the room, but also the municipality to maintain it. And also, we are slowly starting to fundraise to try to have like some extra throughout these years. But it's publicly funded, the basic of it. But it really is about you and me and everyone else listening, that we are safeguarding these kind of projects, you know. And it's also about trust, that I have to trust the coming generation that they will care. But honestly, I've turned that around and I say it's a mutual trust, because they have to trust us that we care, starting these cross-generational projects for them to finish.
Well, it's been great talking about the Future Library. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you.
That's Anna Bedehovind, who is the Future Library Chair. And Anna's been in Australia this week speaking about the Future Library at the National Library and at a range of events at the Sydney Writers' Festival, including a session that's happening later on today, which is about radical hope.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.